Hello, this is Daryl Castle with today's podcast. Today is Friday, April 8th, 2016, and on today's podcast, we will continue our discussion of terrorism by asking ourselves some questions. Who are we supposed to be at war with? Who are we fighting? Who are these people? The worst terrorist attack in American history occurred 15 years ago, and we have been at war ever since, or so it seems. Like we are at war. We send people off to foreign countries to fight, to kill, and sometimes to die. That sounds like war to me. But who are we fighting? President George W. Bush called it a war. He said it was a global war on terrorism, but he did not exactly identify the terrorist. I've often wondered how the American leadership expects to rally people to fight a war, to sacrifice, when they are unable or unwilling to even define who this war is supposed to be against. Here's an example, folks, from last week. French President Francois Hollande and U.S. President Barack Obama held a joint news conference. President Hollande referred to Islamist terrorism, but his comment was inaudible on the video that was released. Come on, man, that's completely ridiculous. Just go ahead and say the words. I know you can do it. Say it. Islamic terrorism. Just one time for us. Oh, I think I get it now. If you refuse to even speak the name of those who seek to kill us, they will start loving us and stop trying to kill us. Terror is not a legitimate enemy. It is a tactic of war. The Germans used it in Europe, and the British and Americans used it against the Germans and the Japanese. It is designed to terrify and to break the will of the target people to resist and thus weaken their government's ability to wage war. The goal of war is the destruction of the enemy's military force and thus the end of his ability to wage war against you. Believe it or not, folks, war has rules. Nations at war are expected to abide by the terms of the Geneva Convention. Soldiers are expected to wear the uniforms of their nations and are thus afforded protection of the rules of war. Resistance fighters are partisans, such as the French Resistance or the resistance against the Nazis in Czechoslovakia and Yugoslavia, do not wear uniforms, but they are recognized. They also must identify themselves as soldiers in some way and, when armed, must carry their weapons openly. The Geneva Convention then offers that no protection to the 9/11 hijackers, to the Paris attackers, the Brussels bombers, the San Bernardino shooters, or the Fort Hood shooter, and so forth. Who are these people then, these terrorists? What rights do they have? We have said they are not afforded the status of soldiers under the rules of war, so if caught, I suppose they are just common criminals and should be treated as such. They should be afforded the rights normally afforded to those suspected of mass murder. The difference is that soldiers and airmen who attack cities in times of war kill far more, but they are not criminals and murderers, but terrorists are criminals and murderers. If you got all that, folks, you understand that. As it turns out, some Muslims are not terrorists, not all of them. I can see the necessity of drawing a distinction between the sections of Islam that harbor jihad and those that only want to go about their lives in peace. During the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, we needed the cooperation of several Muslim countries in order to prosecute the wars. We bought them. We paid them many billions of dollars. That helped a lot, of course. But there was still no reason to unnecessarily antagonize them. If the American leadership has dreams of somehow uniting peaceful Muslims into a united front against the jihadists, they are dreaming. It's probably just that, dreams. Competing ideologies within the Islamic faith make cooperation between them all but impossible. The most significant countries are either Shiite or Sunni, such as Shiite Iran, Sunni Saudi Arabia. These countries are mortal enemies. They hate each other almost as much as they hate us. It was a grave mistake, or perhaps a small part of a diabolical plan to give them something that they hate more than each other. In addition, Saudi Arabia is the world's greatest banker for the jihadists. The Saudis bankroll much of the terrorism around the world, provide almost all of the funding of radical mosques in the West. Some 2,000 of these mosques are in the United States spewing out their radical terrorist teaching 7 days a week. Most of that done, folks, with oil money provided by Western nations. We know that 15 of the 19 9/11 hijackers were Saudis. We know that the Saudi diplomats were quietly rounded up and flown out of the country after the attacks. According to an interview I heard recently with Congressman Walter Jones from North Carolina, the Saudi king visited George W. Bush at his ranch in Texas 8 or 9 times during the George W. Bush presidency. In spite of all that, I argue today that it is reasonable for Americans to decide who they let into their country. It is reasonable for Americans to halt immigration from Muslim countries, at least until the borders are secure and we can be certain of the vetting process. It is very unreasonable, even suicidal, to continue to allow terrorists to pour across our borders uninterrupted. The president tells us we don't want to lose our American values. But I'm not sure he understands what those values are. I'm not sure he appreciates Western civilization and its values. It is clear that the jihadists do not share and do not respect those values. The failure to name the enemy reflects the failure of the war to date. There is no clarity of purpose, no way to measure the results except whether or not there is more or less terror. We war against a movement, not against a nation state. There are no capitals to occupy that will win this war. This ambiguity on the part of our civilian and military leadership leads to confusion. It leads to low morale in the ranks as well as in the people at home. It creates a lack of confidence that this country has the determination and the will to defend itself and to defend civilization in general. It adds to rather than detracts from anti-Muslim sentiment. The purpose of terrorism is obviously to create terror, and it is having that effect across Europe now. Here's something interesting, folks. A recently planned, quote, rally against fear in Brussels had to be canceled because there was too much fear. French intellectual Bernard Henri Levy gave an interview recently to the BBC, and he remarked that, quote, Europe might be dying. He was also very critical of President Obama's activity in the Middle East, meaning, I supposed, that the president's failure to conduct offensive war against ISIS is causing problems in Europe. Well, Mr. Levy, Europe is dying. That's easy to see. European civilization is dead or in its final moments because you, Europeans, did not see anything worth defending. President Obama is certainly deserving of criticism, but why don't you stand on your own feet for a while rather than demanding that someone else defend you? You Frenchmen have a history of resistance, you know. You fought off German invasions twice. Although you needed some help both times, you sacrificed your own people in these struggles. You even did a little invading of your own in Napoleon's day. Why now are you unwilling to defend yourself, to rise to the occasion, and to stand up to this invasion? What's at stake in this struggle for Europe? Everything. Everything you once held dear, even your own right to govern yourselves, to determine your own destiny. All those are at risk after all. Belgium is now 25% Muslim. Brussels even higher. I don't think you're going to like life under Sharia law. Here in America, a man has the sensible suggestion that a nation to be thought of as a nation should defend its own borders. That man is attacked by globalists around the world and especially in his own country. That is the reason for allowing this invasion, by the way, folks, to mold everyone into the world government polyglot that is upon us. Well, we should get off our knees and defend ourselves, folks. At least that's the way I see it. Next week is the Constitution Party National Convention in Salt Lake City. I'll be in attendance there when that party selects its 2016 presidential and vice presidential candidates. I hope to see you there. So, no podcast next week. I'll talk to you again, God willing, 2 weeks from today. Until then, folks, this is Darrell Castle. Thanks for listening.